KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Deborah Keith, filling in for Barbara DeMarco Barrett this afternoon. We've got two incredible guests ready to delight you and inform you. First up is Leslie Levine. Leslie is a life integration expert. She's appeared on numerous radio and TV programs, including The Today Show, CBS This Morning, and Fox News. She is also the author of Ice Cream for Breakfast, and Will This Place Ever Feel Like Home? Simple Advice for Settling In After You Move, which was selected by The Wall Street Journal as one of the best work family books of 1998. She can be reached at her website, www.leslielevine.com. Leslie is here to talk about her newest book, Wish It, Dream It, Do It. It's all about turning your life into a life worth living, into the life you want, reaching your dreams. So I want to warmly welcome Leslie to Writers on Writing. Leslie?
Hi.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good, Deborah. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm wonderful. And I love this book. You pick it up, and it's bright and colorful, and you know, you feel the energy kind of jumping right off of it. Tell us about the inspiration for Wish It, Dream It, Do It, and give our listeners just a little view of what you're offering here.
Well, you know, the inspiration for this book is rather mundane. A writer would really understand this. I had actually just gotten a contract to write my second book. And it's really wonderful to get a contract, but then that means you have to write the book. And when you sign the contract, that means you really have to deliver the book on the right date. And we were actually traveling in an area of Wisconsin called Door County. And my daughter and I went into a little shop, and there was this little framed picture sort of with moons and stars, and then just this little saying, wish it, dream it, do it. And I said to her, well, I have to buy this and put it next to my computer because it's the only way I'm going to get this other book done, period. Mm. And that's how I started to think about it. I thought, well, how do you do this? How do you pursue your dreams? I mean, there have been a lot of books like this, and I thought, you know, I'd like to come up with something, a strategy that won't put people off, that's really accessible. And that's really how I did this book. And each chapter is sort of divided into four sections. One is ask, and it's just questions, because I always think that, you know, when you force yourself to answer questions, you're really living in the moment. When you ask questions, I think the questioning is our sacred task, and the questions themselves become our sacred text, because and sacred, not necessarily religious or spiritual, but really, really important. And after you ask, you experiment. You figure out, well, what can I try? And then you find some things you can try, and you practice. You practice. And I think, you know, people tend to see what, you know, we see what we want to see. And when we see success, we see success. We tend to wear our hearts on our sleeves. We don't usually wear our struggles on our sleeves. But, you know, you and I both know, you know, we all struggle. Mm-hmm. And when you're wishing and dreaming and doing, you're going to struggle, and you're going to have setbacks, and you're going to have disappointments. And instead of giving up at the first one or the second one or the third one, you have to sort of figure out how to go down, you know, two paths at the same time. The one where you're just like a bull in a china shop, and I'm going to get this done no matter what. And the path that is strewn with what I mentioned before, those setbacks and disappointments. And, you know, you just have to keep going. Sometimes, you know, lots of storms. So,
again, I want to remind our listeners here on KUCI, this is Writers on Writing. I'm Deborah Keith, filling in for Barbara DeMarco Barrett. I'm talking to Leslie Levine. Her book is Wish It, Dream It, Do It. Turn the life you're living into the life you want. And she just told us a little bit about the book. And I got to tell you, Leslie, I love how it's divided into 52 weeks. You know, you take the year and you help us on this journey by not, you know, putting it all in our lap at once, but breaking it into sections. Because I think sometimes it's really overwhelming when we've got this dream, this vision, and this energy. But if we fail right away and our expectations are too high for change, you know, all at once, then we don't reach that goal, you know, which might be reachable in smaller steps.
Right. That's a really, really good point. And, you know, the other thing, too, we have lives, you know. Mm-hmm. We have to make dinner. We have to put waffles on the table. You know, a writer's life is very solitary when you're doing the writing, but then you have a life. And, you know, for years I've been wanting to, you know, go to a writer's retreat. And so I can't write now. I'm not there in my life. So I create other writing retreats for myself. And sometimes it's, you know, at a coffee joint for 2 hours. Sometimes it's at my home when nobody is here. And I sort of, you know, romanticize, you know, that writing retreat. And it can really just be, you know, an hour of your time somewhere where you're not going to be disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to realize, you know, we have these lives and people are depending on us.
You're right.
For breakfast and for love and comfort and to help them pursue their dreams too.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're bringing the practical into the dream.
Yeah, got to do that.
As well. Well, I want to, again, invite our listeners deeper into this great book. I'm going to read some of the contents, some of the chapters, like week 5, Embrace Your Imperfections. Love that, because we have to use our imperfections, and maybe they can, you know, become great motivators. Maybe they can be a blessing.
Right.
Week 14, Make Peace with Your Past. Week 15, Cherish and Honor Your Workspace. Week 26, Support Another Dreamer. I love that. Week 33, Stay in School. Week 35, Find Grace in the Balance. Week 40, Replenish Your Fun Jar. Great chapter. Week 43, Perform Mistake Magic. Like the sound of that.
Mm.
And it goes on and on and on. How did you come up with this table of contents?
Oh, my goodness. This is the second book I've written with 52 chapters. I think it's my last book of 52 chapters because, you know, even though they're short, you're just like, okay. Because I would come into my office after I did come up with the list. I posted it behind me, on a wall behind me that I'm looking at right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd come in and I'd say, what do I want to write? And I, you know, look at a chapter title and turn around and write it. And I guess I wanted to come up with chapters that would resonate with people. You know, there's one, this was actually the first chapter I wrote. It's week 39, Listen to Your Quiet.
Mm.
Sometimes we don't listen to what's quietly going on, that dialogue between our mind and our heart, because we're so busy listening to the news and listening to other people and listening to our shoulds and woulds and coulds and all of that. And sometimes, you know, when you get quiet, you can hear what you really want to do. You know, I ask people when I go out and speak, I have a wish bowl, and I ask people to put their wishes in this bowl because it's very instructive. When it gets back up to me, I read some of their wishes, and it's really terrific. It's very instructive in a couple of ways. One, people listen to what other people are wishing for, and it you know, it's a kind of a group think, and it makes them, you know, they're part of a group. And also, sometimes someone is wishing something that someone else hasn't necessarily been able to articulate. So I guess I wanted to be as honest as I could. You know, there's one, well, here's an interesting one, Become Your Own Center of Gravity. I was reading the excerpt of a book about John F. Kennedy Jr. The excerpt was in Vanity Fair, so this is, you know, years ago, and he was editor of his magazine, George, my publisher and editor.
Remember that?
And I guess he used to come into the office, and this writer writing the book said he became everyone's center of gravity. And for some reason, that hit me as very sad because I thought, you know, you need to be your own center of gravity. When someone else is your center of gravity, you lose yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we all want to be like the famous person. We all want the bestseller. We want this. We want that. And then you lose, you know, what you're doing every day. And I always say to people, I want my every days to be as good as possible. I want when 5 o'clock comes around to be, you know, not crabby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I spoke to a group yesterday. It was actually my wish it talk. And I said, you know, I owe that to my kids when they get home to, you know, be the best I can be. I'm not always, but I know that if I work a little bit on my novel, for instance, because it makes me the happiest, I know I'm going to be a better mom when they get home.
Mm-hmm.
And so even if it's just 10 minutes. So I guess, you know, coming up with these titles, it was to be as honest as I could be, accessible, and, you know, and also kind of fun.
Yeah,
you know?
They are very fun. They're eye-catching, you know. And they're light. They're not heavy. I like that. There's a lightness to this book that attracts someone who has a busy life, a busy schedule, you know, and is juggling several things. So,
Thank you. That's
I applaud you, Leslie.
Thanks.
And again, I want to remind our listeners here on Writers on Writing, I'm Deborah Keith. I'm filling in for Barbara DeMarco Barrett. She will be back next week. You can go to her website, penonfire.com, and find out more about Barbara. Appearances, future guests, podcast, all kinds of wonderful things. And this afternoon, I'm talking to Leslie Levine. Her newest book is Wish It, Dream It, Do It. Turn the life you're living into the life you want. And I want to read a couple of the reviews here. Brad Herzog, author of States of Mind, says, it can seem like a long road from dreaming it to doing it. But Leslie Levine provides a blueprint in baby steps. She urges the reader to imagine a fulfilling path and then points the way. And you've got Henriette Ann Clauser, and I interviewed her many years back. She's wonderful. She says, nothing helps achieve a goal sooner than having a patient, supportive friend who will not chide but will challenge. Someone who believes in you, running alongside. Leslie Levine is that kind of friend. Follow her 52 weeks of encouraging exercises, and by the end of a year, you will see not one, but many of your dreams come true. So that is just incredible. Sunshine
really nice.
There.
It was really nice of her.
Yeah, it's great. I want to ask you about the seven questions at the beginning of each chapter. Mm-hmm. Is there a significance to the number seven?
It's so interesting because somebody came up to me yesterday morning after I spoke, and she said, did you know that there is a significant meaning to the number seven? And I said, no, because when I was discussing this with the group, and I said, you know, I came up with seven questions for each chapter. Don't ask me why. I don't know. And she said, it means completion. And I was floored. I thanked her profusely. But I think, you know, how perfect is that? Because, you know, any creative person, what we have on our minds is completing something. I mean, the process is wonderful, but I think I personally would be dishonest if I said, oh, I could just write my novel forever. No, sorry.
Yeah.
I want to finish, and I want to finish by the end of the year. I've got an agent who's waiting for it. The process is wonderful, but completion is sublime, you know, and then we can go on to something else. But the questions, you know, what's interesting about the questions is that originally, you know, when I sent it to my editor at Fireside, they were buried in the middle of a chapter. Now, I didn't consider them buried. I thought, okay, they're there. Mm-hmm. And when I got the manuscript back, she had moved them to the front of the chapter. And she said, move these up. These are really important. Mm-hmm. And I thought, boy, do I have a great editor or what?
You do. That's great.
So I was really, really pleased because, again, you have to stop and think. These are not easy questions. And,
no.
You know, it's interesting. You would think that it's really easy to write a question, you know, as you know, when you're writing a book. And you would think it's really easy, for instance, in the practice sections where, you know, there's a chapter, let's see, this is connect. And it says, practice. For the most part, I connect with people best when I, and then I have three blanks for people to fill in. And, you know, this is a book you want to write in.
Mm-hmm.
Those questions and those practice sections were the hardest to write because I felt really responsible and accountable because I was asking the reader to really delve into his or her wants and desires, and then I was asking the reader to work really hard and write in this book. You know, it is a workbook. It should be a workbook.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you're asking a reader to do that, you're asking the reader to take time away from something else because as much as, you know, as hard as we try to get as much as we can into the day, it's generally impossible. Mm-hmm. And that's probably that's a very big frustration, you know, for writers. You know, we like to read. We like to research. We can think of 100 things to do instead of sit down. And it's funny because I know for me, I worry a lot. You know, when I'm writing a book, I'm worried. I'm walking around just worrying. But when I sit down and do it, I love it. And I'm the happiest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I could just be floating on my back. And sometimes I go out, work on my laptop with my headphones, and I don't hear anybody. I'm just in my own little world.
You get in the zone. Well, yes. I want to visit that idea of writing things down one more time, because there is magic in that. And could you just elaborate a little bit more about what happens when you actually write something down? Not just think it, but write it down. Does it activate some great energy?
Yeah, I think writing something down is not unlike, you know, if you see something, let's say you're writing a book, and you see something in the newspaper, and you cut it out, and you put it in that manila folder.
Mm-hmm.
And you're working on the book, find something else, and you keep filling up that manila folder. And then all of a sudden, you're finished writing the book, and you've never looked in that manila folder. You've never taken that clipping out. But when you cut it out, when you read it the first time, and you cut it out, and then you put it in the folder, something happened in your brain. It made an imprint. And I think that is very similar to just writing something down. You know, sometimes someone will say something to me. I've got so many little pieces of paper, Deborah, it makes me really certifiable. I mean, you know, just check me in. It makes me crazy. And then I say to myself, you know what, Leslie? The fact that you wrote it down, and it's going to come back to you at the very right place that you need it to. I mean, I've got to tell you, I lost several pages of this novel a couple of months ago, and it was bad. Bad, 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 bad. I sat for hours in front of my computer speaking to it. I called my computer guru at midnight. Mm-hmm. We were on the phone till 3 o'clock, and she said to me finally, Leslie, it's gone. It's gone. And then she said, but you still have it. You still have it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it was physically debilitating. And the next day, you know, of course it came back. It all came back. Now, thankfully, these weren't, you know, this was fiction. And
mm-hmm.
it came back, I think, better. I had already written it down. It
mm-hmm.
had already come out of my head. When you write things down, it validates what your beliefs are.
Mm-hmm.
It can calm you down, I think, you know, when you journal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always say to people, you know, I don't care if it's on a paper napkin or now with gas prices the way they are, use your receipt as stationery, you know? Keep it. Keep it for your little notes, you know, because we all know when we go to bed at night and turn the lights out and you think of something and you say, I'll remember that. No, you won't.
You've got to write it down. Well, I want you to give us some more organization tips, because you are a novelist, you are a speaker, you're a life integration expert. This is a how-to self-help book. You've got kids. You have a full life. I would like you to give us some tips on managing all that and organizing your workspace. I think.
Oh, my God. Thank God nobody can see where I'm sitting. I'm so sorry. Listen. My workspace is not so fabulous right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm staring at, I've got the glass of a, you know, of a light fixture that's on one desk, because
mm-hmm.
I found a bug in it the other day and I had to clean it no matter what. I had to clean it out. But have I gotten it back up there? No.
Uh-huh.
I've got a bare bulb up there. But I think for me, the organization actually comes from just a sense of being accountable, quite honestly. And I think I have a pretty good, I'm very, very disciplined. Now,
mm-hmm.
I'm sort of telling you what other people have said to me.
Okay.
Because if, you know, I have to remind myself, you know, when I look around and I think, you know, I'm going nuts because I have too many things going on, you know, I have to say, look, Leslie, you finished 3 books. You finished
mm-hmm.
them. You got them in on time. You've written articles. You've been published here and there. You know, that's not so shabby.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't worry about it. So I think, you know, if you are disciplined, and discipline, you know, what does that mean? Well, I think it means sometimes canceling your subscriptions to magazines, because every time you pick up your magazines, is that time that you would be writing and completing your manuscript?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's discipline and being able to say to a friend, you know what, can we wait until October to get together?
Mm-hmm.
It's saying, instead of lunch, could we just have coffee for a half an hour? Because I understand, it's, you know, friends are understanding to a point,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, you need to nourish those relationships. Discipline is, I think, well, I don't know if this is discipline, but being organized is being really kind to your family and letting them know how much their help means to you and how important it is that we all help each other. I asked my son today, he's 11. What did I ask him to do? Well, Well, a couple of things. He didn't do them all, but I asked him to do something, and he didn't do it. And I said, you know, we're a team around here,
mm-hmm.
and we all help each other, and that's how we get along, and I really need your help. And then likewise to say, God, I am really grateful to you. My son wants to be a vet. One cat here has been on medicine all week. I don't like sticking my fingers in an animal's mouth. It's not me. But he is terrific mm-hmm. at it. And so I have to make sure that I really reinforce that. But getting back to the work mm-hmm. and the discipline, you just really have to know that you can't rely. There isn't an alarm clock. You don't have a friend calling you, particularly if you're writing something on spec.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this novel I'm writing, you know, my agent, she's read portions of it. She likes it. She said something very funny to me about a month ago or so. We had gone to a writing conference in Wisconsin, and she came back here, and we were here for a day or two, and then I was taking her to the airport. My son was in the car, and I said, so, what would you say about somebody who's taken, you know, about a year to write two-thirds of a book, but then she wants to really finish, like, in the next 4 months? What would you say about that? And she said, well, you know, there really aren't rules, and everybody works at their different pace, and you know, you've got to be disciplined. But I want whatever you have, Leslie, by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't want to lose face with her.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that's the discipline you need.
Right, right.
You know, it's hard when, I think it's harder when you're writing on spec versus, you know, something that you have a contract for. But if you're passionate about it, and I don't want to sound like a, you know, a quote on a coffee cup, but mm-hmm. but truly, if you're passionate about it, I think you will find a way to get it done.
I agree. Yeah, but you do need that discipline. I think you had some wonderful examples there. Again, I want to remind our listeners that this is Writers on Writing. I'm Deborah Keith, filling in for Barbara DeMarco Barrett. She'll be back next week. And I've been talking to Leslie Levine, author of Wish It, Dream It, Do It, Turn the Life You're Living into the Life You Want. And it's got 52 chapters and all kinds of insight and advice, places to journal, questions to get you started. And I am really interested, Leslie, in the fact that you are out there speaking and you've got this platform and you're sharing some of the message from your book. And I know there's a lot of writers out there that would like to integrate their writing and speaking skills mm-hmm. and teaching skills. And mm-hmm. do you have any advice for them? Like, how do the opportunities come about for you to speak? How do you take advantage of these things?
Well, the first time I spoke was before my first book came out. So let's say I think it was probably 1998. It came out in October 1998. And, you know, the book is about moving. And someone I'd interviewed at Atlas Van Lines asked if I wanted to speak at their conference. They bring in their big corporate clients.
Mm-hmm.
So there were about 200 people, and it was here in Chicago. I hadn't moved here. You know, I wrote a book about moving, and then we had the opportunity to move, which was weird. But that's another story. And so, you know, I was nervous because, you know, my background is, you know, I did a lot of public relations and writing,
mm-hmm.
and my background is, you know, putting other people in the spotlight. And we writers, we're good at that. You know, if you're writing about them, you quote them and you put them in your stories and your articles, and, you know, it feels good and you get paid, and then you're on to the next story.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of nervous about that, and I remember I was at a family dinner somewhere, and there was someone there who did a lot of speaking. And this was about a week or so before I was going to speak here in Chicago. And I said, do you have any advice for me? And he said, you know, he said, well, forget about, you know, imagining them all naked. And I, you know, I said to myself, well, what a horrifying thought, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make you more nervous. But he said three words, which I took as I do a workshop now, and I used his three words, and it's love your audience. And here's what I got from that. To me, that means that instead of appearing before an audience and standing in as their guest,
mm-hmm.
you know, they are my guest. The people I'm talking to, whether I'm in a school auditorium or yesterday I was in a college auditorium or I'm in, you know, a big, huge convention center or wherever I'm, you know, in a library, they are my guests and they are in my living room. In my head, they've come to my house.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as you're in my house, you're my guest. and I'm going to treat you with respect. I'm going to value your time. I'm going to give you eye contact and tell you where the bathroom is. You know, you're my guest. And when you look at it that way, I think it minimizes some of the nerves you might be carrying when actually the spotlight is on you. And that has helped me so much. And, you know, also practicing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, writers, we love words and we love the printed word, but the printed word can hamstring a speech. And so you never read a speech.
Mm-hmm. You, right.
You write it, you know, you do some bullets, and therefore you tell stories. And if you're telling stories in a speech, it's not likely that any presentation is going to be the same, because we change our stories. We, you know,
mm-hmm.
every day we have a new experience, and something might come in that might affect that.
Right.
And in terms of finding venues, there are so many ways. I mean, there are park districts and the Y, and there are lots of places to start out speaking. You have to be able to sell yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's not easy, but you know, we're writers. We can create scripts for ourselves and sort of write it out,
mm-hmm.
Call people, network, let people know that you're speaking on a certain topic or that you'd like to. There are numerous, numerous opportunities to speak. We have something here called Parent University, and different school districts sponsor this. It's usually in the fall. And, you know, what I did was I had written a piece after this book came out. I wrote a piece for the PTA magazine. The National PTA has mm-hmm. a magazine called Our Children. And I thought, oh, what can I write? What can I write? Oh, I know. Helping Your Children Dream Big.
Ooh, okay? Very good.
So that article, let's call it 1,200 words, I don't know, turned into a workshop. And I gave that workshop last year, and then somebody called me or emailed me about a week ago and said, your name came up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I might be their keynoter this year.
Well,
wow. Next year, March. And that's, you know, it's neat. And it's, you know, it is. It's about platform building. I mean, you know, that's something I do. I help other writers build their platforms.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, this is powerful advice, Leslie. This great insight, and I really am thrilled that you've shared that, because there's a lot of good stuff writers out there can use. And I want to make sure that we give everyone the name of the book again and your website so that you can be contacted. Again, I've been talking to Leslie Levine. The book is Wish It, Dream It, Do It. Turn the life you're living into the life you want. And Leslie is a novelist, also the author of Ice Cream for Breakfast. She's a life integration expert, has appeared on numerous radio and TV programs. Your website is leslielevine.com. That's LeslieLevine.com. And Leslie, in about 30 seconds, you can share anything you'd like with our audience.
First I want to say thank you for listening. And thanks
you.
To Deborah. This is just so fun. And, you know, I encourage you to you know, really, really go after it and carve some time out for yourself. You know, read Barbara's book, that, you know,
mm-hmm.
Pen on Fire,
mm-hmm.
and go to her website and just do what you have to do to get your writing done. Because every time you say, I want to write a book, I want to write a book,
mm-hmm.
or I want to write an article, you're not writing.
Very
you're
good.
Not writing. You have to write, and you know, do visit my website. I answer all my email, and I can help people with their writing. But mostly have faith. You know, I always talk about having thing one and thing two from The Cat in the Hat. If you had thing one and thing two on each shoulder, one would say you can do it, and the other would say don't give up.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Leslie.
Thanks,
it's been
Deborah.
A thrill to have you on Writers on Writing. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you. And again, the book is Wish It, Dream It, Do It. Turn the life you're living into the life you want. And that was Leslie Levine, and quite an accomplished author and expert in many things. Again, you can reach her at www.leslielevine.com. Up next, we've got Carolyn Parkhurst, author of Lost and Found. This is a fabulous book, great premise. She is the New York Times bestselling author of The Dogs of Babel. She'll be with us in just a minute, so hang tight. And welcome back to Writers on Writing here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Deborah Keith, filling in for Barbara DeMarco Barrett, and I'm excited to welcome to the show Carolyn Parkhurst. Her latest is Lost and Found. She's also the New York Times bestselling author of The Dogs of Babel, which has been translated into 19 languages. She holds an MFA in creative writing from American University and lives in Washington, D.C. with her husband and two children. But today, again, she is here to talk about Lost and Found. Carolyn, welcome to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this wonderful book. Very timely. Great premise. I'm going to start out by reading a quote from the Library Journal. It says, take seven unlikely couples with juicy secrets, a globe-trotting reality show, a couple of unscrupulous producers, a host who loves to be hated, and what do you have? Lost and Found, a delightfully complex and deliciously fast-paced novel that's sure to be on everyone's beach reading list this summer. And the reviews go on and on and on. Jacqueline Mitchard, author of The Deep End of the Ocean and Cage of Stars, says, Lost and Found pulls us by the hand to witness the inexpressible tenderness and cruelty of real emotion in the last place we should expect to find it, among the contestants on a reality TV show. Sly and sage, it entertains as surely as it beguiles. And there's pages more, but Carolyn, I would like you to introduce your book. Tell us about the inspiration and why you wrote it and why right now.
Okay. Well, the book is about a reality show called Lost and Found, and it's a global scavenger hunt. There are a bunch of teams of two people who are traveling around to all of these different locations, and they have to find these odd objects like a bunch of sequins or a live parrot, and they have to take those with them for the rest of the game. And I guess the reason I was interested in writing about a reality show is that, you know, I think a lot of people find that very compelling. You know, there's this drama inherent in that kind of show because you feel like the stakes are very high, like you're watching something that could really have an effect on people's lives. You know, they might win $1 million, they might meet the person they're going to marry, or whatever the conceit of the show is. And I wanted to see if I could translate that drama onto the page. But even though the show, I mean, even though the book is about reality TV, that sort of forms the backdrop of it. It's really more about the characters and their relationships, and it just was kind of an interesting crucible to put these characters into and see what would happen when they were on camera 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm. Are you a big reality TV show fan?
I have watched a few reality shows in my time. I do enjoy them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really enjoyed the writing. It's great. Your descriptive powers, you feel like you're right there. And again, exploring relationships. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about that. How do you take these characters and put these relationships in this book and tie it together with plot and make it sing?
You know, with this book, because I was working with two-person units, you know, there's a mother and daughter, there's a married couple, there's a set of brothers, you know, they were all people that had an existing relationship. And so I looked at each set of characters that I thought of, and I wondered what was going on in their relationship, what they were hiding. You know, one of the themes of the book is the way that the things that we keep hidden can be a source of shame. And, so there's a mother and daughter. I started with them, and the thing between them is that the daughter has recently given birth in secret after keeping her whole pregnancy a secret from her mother. Uh-huh. And, you know, we've all heard those stories about, you know, girls giving birth at the prom or whatever, and you think, how could that have happened? And I wanted to look at that and sort of find out how it could happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a great intro in introducing those characters, and you made it, you know, possible in our eyes. Good job. Again, I want to remind our listeners, this is Writers on Writing. I'm Deborah Keith. I'm filling in for Barbara DeMarco Barrett. Right now, I am talking to Carolyn Parkhurst. Her book is Lost and Found. She is also the author of New York Times bestselling The Dogs of Babel. We just mentioned description. Do you have any more tips on that for the writers out there that, you know, are just real engaged in your writing and what you've done and the success that you've had so early on in your career? What are your best tips for writing description, for putting together great characters?
Well, I think that the most important thing is to sound confident. If you're confident in what you're writing, then I think your readers will believe you. You know, one of the things about this book is I had my characters traveling to a lot of locations that I haven't actually been to myself. Mm-hmm. They go to Japan and Sweden and a bunch of places, and most of them I hadn't traveled to. So, you know, I was anxious about whether I would be able to, you know, write about these places believably. And I found that the most important thing was to find a few interesting details that would stand out and would kind of serve to paint a picture just by themselves. You know, you don't have to get everything down, but if you get a few crucial things that stand out for the reader and you sound confident about what you're talking about, they'll tend to go along with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good advice. I read an article, and you comment on this concept of people desperate to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
Could you explore that a little bit more and tell us about it and how it relates to your novel?
Uh-huh. Well, you know, in a very obvious way, people who go on a reality show are you know, they have a lot of reasons for doing it, but one of them is that they're willing to put their lives on display. And mm-hmm. so there's the question of what kind of person does that and what makes a person want to, you know, do something so public and put their personal lives out there for people to see. But, you know, on a deeper level, I think one of the themes of my writing, of both of my books so far, is how well do we ever really know the people we're closest to? And, you know, in this book, each character is with someone they supposedly know very well, but mm-hmm. it turns out that none of them know the people they're with as well as they think they do. And so there's this, you know, desire to be seen, you know, mm-hmm. in the kind of literal sense, to be seen on television, and a deeper sense to be seen for who you really are by the people you're close to. And, you know, not the characters are not always finding it easy to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very, very good. Caroline, you have an MFA in creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, was that a big bonus as you went to write your first novel and now this second novel? Did that help you? Would you encourage other writers to follow that path?
You know, it was a great experience for me. I'm very glad I did it, and I think that I emerged a better writer because of it, but it's not like it teaches you how to become a writer. Or, you know, it doesn't necessarily you know, tell you how to get a book published or anything like that. You know, the reason that I found it valuable was that it was a chance to really dedicate myself to writing for a period of time and to be around other people who are doing the same thing,
mm-hmm.
and to get feedback on my work and to, you know, a lot of it is about learning the process of revision. You know, you get all of this mm-hmm. feedback, and one person will say, I love this part, and another person will say, I hate it. And, you know, part of becoming a writer is learning to edit yourself and to figure out which of those things to take to heart, you know, when you're revising and people have different ideas, you know. So I found it very useful for all of those reasons. But I don't think you should go into it thinking you have to do it to be a writer, you know, or to be a published writer, or thinking that it's going to set you on a particular career path, because that's not really what it's about.
Okay. Do you think that publishers and agents took notice of your work faster because you had the MFA behind you? I mean, is it like a little credential, a little sparkle behind your name?
I think probably not. I think, you know, at this point, so many people get MFAs, and there are so many programs out there that, you know, they'll probably, when someone sees a query letter that mentions that, I think they probably make note of it, but really what they're waiting for is to see whether they like the manuscript or not. I don't think it mm-hmm. really opens any doors necessarily.
Well, tell us here on Writers and Writing about selling these two books. Was it easy? Was it hard? Tell us about the process.
Well, I finished my first book literally the day before my first child was born. So,
wow.
I had been writing sort of with that as my deadline, you know, my own personal deadline. And once I finished the book, I waited a few months because I just had this baby. But mm-hmm. I started sending out query letters to agents, and I got a lot of rejection letters. You know, I found that to be the most frustrating part, because you get a lot of form letters from people saying, oh, we don't think there's a market for your work, and they haven't even, you know, read a single page of what you've written.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be very frustrating. Once I found an agent, it went pretty quickly. He sold it within a couple of weeks. So, you know, from there on, it went much more smoothly. And the second book, because I had already had the first book published, mm-hmm. we went back to my same publisher, Little Brown, when I had about 50 pages, and sold it on the basis of that.
Oh, that's
so. It was a very different experience the second time around. You know, mm-hmm. There was a lot of security in having sold the book so early on, but on the other hand, you start to think, you know, they've already given me some money. I hope this is what they were thinking they were getting into, you know. There's a whole different kind of pressure,
right?
You know, it's
right.
A nice position to be in, but it's not without its, you know, negative side.
Right. What makes a great agent?
I think you have to have someone that you always feel is on your side. You know, the agent plays this kind of delicate role of negotiating between you and the publisher in all of these different ways, not just literal negotiations on financial matters and stuff, but, you know, they're kind of your guide through the publishing industry because they understand how it works and most writers, you know, don't. So it's really important to have someone that you really feel is working for you and that, you know, is always working in your best interest. And, you know, beyond that, you want someone who's enthusiastic about your work and mm-hmm. I think someone who seems like they're well connected in the industry, though it's hard to judge how, you know, how that is. But mm-hmm. those are the most important things, I think.
Excellent. Tell us, Carolyn, what you learned as a writer as you wrote Dogs of Babel. And also your latest Lost and Found. What were some of the lessons that really came forward?
Well, before I wrote The Dogs of Babel, I had really only ever written short stories. So that writing that book was an education in how to write a novel. And, you know, one of the most important things I've learned, I think, is discipline, that you have to sit down and do it, you know, maybe not every day. Some writers say absolutely every day. I don't necessarily believe that, but you have to do it on a regular basis or else you're going to get out of practice and it's mm-hmm. easier and easier not to do it. You really have to, it's a total cliche, but you have to learn how to turn off the inner critic when you're doing the first draft. You know, you mm-hmm. have to sit there and write whatever comes out, no matter how bad it is, and just say, I'm going to fix this later. The most important thing is getting it on the page.
Mm-hmm.
So those are a few of the things.
Very good. Very good. I'm looking at the book right now. I've got Lost in Hand in my hands, a novel by Carolyn Parkhurst, who we're talking to right now on Writers and Writing. And I love it, Carolyn. It's bright yellow and it's got parrots all over it. And it's something you want to pick up and read. I mean, it's really attractive and
fun. They did
fun.
A great job with the cover.
Yeah,
thought,
a great
yeah.
job. And there's, you know, little imprint of a globe on the cover behind the yellow, and you've got all these great reviews. I mean, this just looks like the best success story. I mean, you've had a great go of it.
Yeah.
If you were mentoring someone right now, mm-hmm. and they had a great book, mm-hmm. Similar to yours, what would your, like, top three pieces of advice be for them?
Well, the first one is persistence. You know, you really have to, no matter how many rejection letters you get, and I don't know a single writer who hasn't gotten a million rejection letters, mm-hmm. you know, you have to trust that you're going to find your audience. And that, you know, whatever you've got, there is someone out there who's going to want to read it. It's just a matter of zeroing in, you know, on the right audience mm-hmm. at the right time. So that would be one. Another would be to really keep track of what your vision was when you started this project, whatever it is you're writing. Mm-hmm. I think it's really easy to get bogged down in revising something and thinking, well, maybe people will like it better if I do this. And you can totally ruin a manuscript by revising all the life out of it. So be very careful to keep in mind, you know, what you were thinking about when the book existed only in your imagination, and don't mm-hmm. let go of whatever it is that made you passionate about it in the first place. And I don't know if I have a third.
Very insightful. Well, Caroline, you mentioned audience, and I'm looking at your press pack right now, and I know you've traveled across the country. You've gone to Washington, D.C., and Boston, and Vermont, and mm-hmm. Oregon, New York, San Francisco, California. Tell us about the experience of being on a book tour. What's it like? What do you have to do to sell your book? I mean, what tips do you have for other writers that are going to follow in your footsteps?
It's a very strange thing to go on a book tour because writers, you know, you spend most of your time sitting alone in a room somewhere mm-hmm. writing, and then
exactly.
all of a sudden you have to get out there and be very public and be on all the time. You know, you have to be answering questions. You have to get up, like, stand at a podium and, you know, mm-hmm. read passages and things like that. And that can be very daunting. And I think the important thing is just to, not lose sight of what it is that you're trying to say in your book. Try to, figure out the answer to your questions people are going to ask before you get out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really exciting though. There's no other time when I get to really meet people who have read my work and mm-hmm. are interested in talking to me about it. So, that part of it is really kind of a thrill.
Mm, it must be so exciting.
Yeah.
Well, Carolyn, do you have a passage that you would like to read for us?
Sure. I have a passage that there are seven different narrators in the book, and this one is narrated by Laura, who is the mother of the teenage girl who gave birth secretly.
Mm-hmm.
And in this passage, she's just kind of, wistfully thinking about when her daughter Cassie was growing up and how different that is from now when everything is very tense between them. So I'm going to read that. I remember when Cassie was a little girl, not even 2 years old, she had a love of lights. She wasn't afraid of the dark. She just liked to see things shine. She'd walk through the rooms of our house day and night, pointing at lamps and light fixtures, yelling, "On, Mama do it, on." Eventually, I got her to add please. Her toddler equivalent was peas, which made the demands a little more palatable. One evening, we were out past dark, and as I lifted Cassie out of her car seat to bring her into the house, she turned her head upward and pointed at the dark sky. On peas," she said, pointing up at the night. "Mama do it." No one else ever loves you the way your children do when they're young. No one else will ever cry when you leave the room. I try not to spend too much time thinking about those days because I know they're perfect only in memory, and I know I need to focus on the girl I've got in front of me right now. But sometimes I can't help but give into it, to live inside the warm hues I've colored those moments with, to remember what it was like back when she smiled just to see me, when she needed my help to move a spoon to her mouth or to walk down a flight of steps, back when she had to reach up to hold my hand, back when she thought I could turn on the sky. And that's it.
Oh, beautiful. I love that. I love that last line.
Thank you.
You could turn on the sky. Now, did you have the ending in sight when you first started writing this book? I mean, do you work with an outline, with a draft?
I don't at all, and I always wish that I were that kind of writer because it can be very scary to start off not having any idea where you're going. But I really learn things through writing, and that's part of what makes it interesting, And so what was very useful about this book is that I had the built-in structure of this reality show. So I knew I was working toward the end of the show. But as to all the other details, from the kind of minor question of who wins the show, all the way through what happens with all these characters and their relationships, I didn't really have any idea how it was going to go until I was actually writing it and most of the way through.
Hmm. And do you have a certain amount of time that you make yourself write each day? Are you real disciplined?
Well, with my first book, I had a rule that I had to write a page a day, and I could write more if it was going well, but I couldn't write less, and that went pretty well. Then the second book, I already had kids, and that changed everything because now I can only write when I have a babysitter, and so I have to be more disciplined about the time I have because once that time is gone, I can't sit mm-hmm. down and do it whenever I feel like it. So mm-hmm. it's a different kind of discipline. So I don't have any rules for myself now about page lengths per day, but I sort of say, I've got to get something accomplished today or I'm not going to feel good about how the day went. So mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. kind of how I do it.
Again, I want to remind our listeners, this is Writers on Writing. I'm Deborah Keith, filling in for Barbara DeMarco Barrett. I've been talking to Carolyn Parkhurst, author of Lost and Found. You also may know her name from the best-selling novel, The Dogs of Babel. And this book is fabulous. It's a fictional account of a reality TV show, and some colorful, wonderful characters that are going to break your heart and make you laugh and all sorts of things. And Caroline's been sharing her insight with us, again, here on Writers on Writing. Now, Carolyn, I want to ask you about plotting a writing career. I mean, you mm-hmm. have, everything you need for an incredible career. You have this MFA, a first best-selling novel, a lot of great reviews for the second book, so many great things. Have you thought ahead, like as you work with your agent and publisher and editors, do you put out kind of a blueprint, a plan, something that you're working towards? Or do you have does your editor or agent say, you should write a couple articles here or do this or that in order to round out your life as a writer?
Well, you know, when you put all those things together, my biggest thought is don't screw it up. You know, that's kind of what's running through my mind right now. But, you know, I it's not something I've given a lot of thought to beyond that I want to write the books I want to write. I want to not be tied down to, like, searching for a particular audience or hoping to make everybody happy or something like that. You know, my second book is very different from my first in a lot of ways, and I've only really just begun starting to think about my third, but I think it's going to be different yet again. And, you know, that made me nervous a little bit because I thought, well, I had the successful first book, and I certainly hope that people who like that book will like this one, but I didn't want to try to recreate the same book, you know, to the end of hoping the same people would like it. So that was kind of a lesson I had to learn. And as for shaping my career, I'm just hoping that I'll continue to improve as a writer and, you know, that I'll have the freedom to keep, you know, challenging myself and coming up with new ideas and following them, basically, is the only plan I have.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have any mentors or people who have served as inspiration or books that you draw upon?
Well, I had two professors in my MFA program who were definite mentors to me. They're Richard McCann and Kermit Moyer. They're both great writers and exceptional teachers. And they've been, you know, they've been great through everything. You know, there are a lot of books that I kind of go to time and time again. The Virgin Suicides by Jeffrey Eugenides is one of my favorite books, and, you know, I reread it every now and then. Whenever I find a book that I'm really passionate about and that kind of makes me say, I wish I could do that. You know, I try to keep it in my mind and return to it from time to time to see what I can learn from it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. You know, one thing you said about writing and you know, pulling in your audience is having confidence in your writing. And one thing I loved about Lost and Found is just the witty dialogue and the pace at which everything moves. And, you know, your descriptions are great. Do you have any advice for writers out there to emulate some of that? How do you pull off great dialogue? You know, something that speeds up the writing, that just pulls you along.
Yeah, it's, you know, I don't think of myself as necessarily being that good at dialogue. So thank you. I'm happy to hear that. But you know, it's advice you hear over and over again. But read your dialogue out loud and try to make sure not everybody sounds the same. You know, I know that it's kind of hard to write different characters who don't all have sort of your own verbal tics and things like that. Mm-hmm. But you have to try to figure out how each person would sound different from one another. And, you know, just let your own sort of sense of humor and sensibility come through. And, you know, don't be afraid to write something in case it falls flat. You know, you can change it later. Mm-hmm. So just put it out there, whatever it is you think is funny.
Powerful advice. Thank you so much, Carolyn. Again, I want to remind all the listeners out there that this is Writers on Writing here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. I'm Deborah Keith. I've been filling in for Barbara DeMarco Barrett. She will be back next week. You can go to penonfire.com to find out more about Barbara, future shows, guests, and podcasts, and all kinds of wonderful things. And Carolyn has written Lost and Found. We've been talking about this great book. Her last book, the New York Times bestselling first, offering, was The Dogs of Babel. And Carolyn, is there a way readers and writers can get a hold of you? Do you have a website?
Yeah, I do have a website. It's www.carolynparkhurst.com, and I have an email address on there. I'm always thrilled to hear from anyone who wants to talk to me.
Thank you so much. This is a fabulous book, great reviews, really fun, great premise. Good luck with everything, Carolyn. I know we're going to see your name a lot more.
Thanks so much. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Have a great afternoon.
Okay, you too.
Thanks. And this is Writers on Writing here on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. We'll be back with a fabulous show next week again. Our authors this afternoon, again, were Leslie Levine, Wish It, Dream It, Do It. Turn the life you're living into the life you want. And we just had an incredible dialogue with Carolyn Parkhurst, author of Lost and Found. Have a fabulous week. I walk the maze of birds.